It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here. It's Easter Sunday. And we're happy to be here. We're still going to church today, though. As soon as we get out of here. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Wes Moss here, along with Jake Moss, Luke Moss, all in the telephone booth here on a Sunday morning. And what are we going to do? Top three things you need to know. Outflows. Massive. Billions of dollars of outflows from equities or stocks so far in 2019. Number two, despite the market being up significantly. And this week, we saw a tiny, tiny bit of a slowdown for equities. If you look at where we ended up for the year, for the Dow up about 0.5%, for the week, S&P 500 actually down just ever so slightly for the week. Still a big up year for the Dow, up 13, almost 14%, S&P 500 up almost 16%. So good morning, welcome to Money Matters. Number one, outflows from stocks. Number two, we're going to talk about the biggest economy that's been skated out of recession for the longest on the planet. 27 years, a major economy, avoided recession. We've been in and out and in and out while this country has ridden to the positive year after year after year. We're going to get to that in just a minute. And then how do you look at dividend paying stocks? Where do you find them? What are some of the criteria you need to have? So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on Easter Sunday morning. So if we look towards, well, let me start with the statistic here. And this was in Barron's this weekend. And here we are in a year where we've had markets go straight up since December 24th when we hit down 20%. So we hit bear market territory as of the end of last December. And then we've had this massive recovery north ever since. In the meantime, the reason we're going to talk about an economy that stayed out of a recession is that investors clearly feel as though there's a big boogeyman right around the corner at all times. Things may be good today, but aren't we on the verge of? What are we on the verge of? A correction, a recession. Well, technically, we're always on the verge of a recession. We're always on the verge of a correction. Because historically, these things happen over and over and over again. This is the way the economy works. It's cyclical. There's no such thing as straight up, except for in a country that has skated recession for 27 straight years. That country, Australia. Australia has not been in recession for 27 years. But let's start with outflows here for a minute, and I'll show you what I mean. Mutual fund investors, again, not jumping up and down when it comes to stocks. This is Bank of America Merrill Lynch tracking data shows a net of $90 billion year to date flowing out of stocks. $126 billion of that has been out of traditional mutual funds. We've seen about 35 of that go back into exchange traded funds. So about 35 of that is just money going from high cost mutual funds, finding a low cost version of an exchange traded or an ETF. If you haven't made that switch, you need to look at that as an investor. That's just a trend that's been happening for a decade. It'll continue to happen for another decade, maybe the next couple of decades. There's so much money in traditional mutual funds that it's just going to take time for them, for all investors to kind of wake up, say, oh, we've got lower cost options over here, exchange traded funds. But that's what's been happening. But the key here to note is that almost $100 billion, real money, has flowed out of stocks. And where has it gone? $120 billion rush into bond funds, which just tells you that investors are still really nervous. Hey, wait a minute, I'm going to get out of stocks. It's been a good run. Get me into something safe, 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 because something, quote, bad's around the corner. And that's the market. And that's the economy. And that's how it works, because if it were that everyone was blindly optimistic today, that's when I'd tell you to head for the exits. If everybody around the table is saying, I'm getting into stocks, then you've got nobody left to buy. Everybody's bought in. That's euphoria, and that's when the cycle ends. We're just not there yet. And the number, empirically, this shows that we're not near euphoria. more money going out of stocks, more money going into bonds, which shows that the investors are still very cautious and very scared. Now, here's part of it, which is brings me to number two, the length of economic expansion. July 2019, this year, will mark 10 full years of economic expansion. 10 years without a recession. Now, we're not talking about stocks right now. We've had corrections during that 10-year period of time. We've had a couple that got really close to 20%, and then we had a 20% drawdown if you count what happened as of December 24th, 2018. The market has not been perfect. It's not been an escalator north. It's been a good market for the last 10 years, but we've had corrections, we've had pullbacks, we've had what are technically bear markets. But the economy itself has not gone into recession. Now, going on 10 years. And remember, the definition of a recession is two negative quarters of GDP growth. We've got to be contracting as a country for really at least a six-month period of time in order for it to count as a recession. So here we are on the verge of the longest expansion in U.S. history. And we've talked about this expansion, despite it being the longest. Yes, it's been right up there with the longest expansions in history. It's also been a much slower expansion coming out of the 2008 financial crisis. And that's why we hear that this has been the economic recovery has been shallow. But shallow is fine. Most economic recoveries, if you look back over history, you'll see a lot of recoveries in the 4%+ range per year. Average recoveries, pick your recovery. Go back to the 60s, from 61 to 69. Stocks, the economy expanded almost 5% a year on average during that expansion of over 100 months of expansion, averaging 4.9%. But Wes, that was the 60s. That's a long time ago. Well, the 70s, same thing, over 5%. If you go to 70 to 73, if you go to March of 75 to 1980, that expansion lasted almost 60 months, so call it 5 years, 4.3% rate of growth, GDP change on average during that expansion, 4.4 during all the way from the 80s all the way to the 90s, that expansionary period of time averaged almost 4.5% a year. So most of the recoveries we've seen from recessions in the United States have been in the 4%+ range. You go to where we are today, and we've grown on average about 2.2% per year. Now, we've seen GDP growth, we've seen economic expansion accelerate over the last couple of years since 2016, but the recovery, now call it 118 months. By the way, longest recovery, you've got to go to economic expansion without a recession. You've got to go back to March of 1991 all the way to March of 01, which is 120 months, a solid 10 years of expansion. Where are we today? Well, we're at about 118. So we're getting really close to the longest economic expansion on record, but it's been shallow. Current pace has clipped in at only a 2.2%. But no matter where we are in this cycle, whether we're at the beginning of it, which we're clearly not at the beginning of this cycle, the debate would be whether we're in the middle of the cycle, meaning there's a lot of time left, or at the end of the cycle, meaning that we've only got a couple months left. Whether we're in the middle or the end, there's always worry that a recession is right around the corner. Even if it's not, even if there's no recessionary talk, if there's no data in sight to even forecast any of that or foreshadow any of that, expectations are that there's always a recession right around the corner. We expect them. We expect recessions. And only a few months ago, remember, back to what we talked about in the fourth quarter of last year, Wall Street was convinced we were on the edge of economic decline. Trade war with China. Fed raising interest rates. Remember Trump saying the Fed is clueless. They don't know what they're doing. An inverted yield curve. That happened not even a month ago. Wait a minute, yield curve. Now, let's take a look at what's really happening. Before we write off this current expansion, and for that matter, any expansion in the future, before you just write it off as, oh, it's got to die of, quote, old age, let's take a look at another relatively large economy that has stayed out of recession for 27 years. Yes, 27 years, Australia. Now, before you roll your eyes and say, Wes, isn't Australia full of just iron ore? Don't they just have a bunch of minerals and kangaroos? So who cares? Australia doesn't count. Let's go over some of the numbers when it comes to Australia. This is not the state of Delaware. No offense to Delaware. I love Delaware. It's the sixth largest economy in size, first of all, by land, and just outside the top 10 economies on the planet when it comes to the size, the economic size of the economy. Australia does $1.4 trillion with a T, that's trillion, worth of gross domestic product. As a quick review, who are the biggest in the world? Of course, the United States. We're number one, called a $20.5 trillion economy. The European Union as a whole is number two, and then China, Japan, Germany, the UK. Those are the top five. Now, Australia's got 25 million people, and now, if you look at their population, they do actually rank pretty far down the list. It's a pretty sparsely populated island. They're number 51 in the world for population, but they crank out so much economic production that they rank above Switzerland, they rank above Saudi Arabia, they rank above the Netherlands, they rank above Mexico as far as their economic size. They're right on par with Spain, South Korea, and only a few percentages behind Canada. Not far behind the United States and not far behind the U.S. when it comes to per capita GDP. We're at about $62,000 per person in the United States. Australia's about $52,000, so not that far behind. Well, how have they stayed out of recession for that long? Well, we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it right here on Money Matters. Good morning. It's Easter Sunday. More Money Matters. We're going to go to weather, traffic, then more Money Matters and the talk of the Australian economy. Straight ahead. Wake up and get yourself to church, yeah. Wake up and get yourself to church, yeah. Wake up, wish I could hear you right. Good morning, welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning, it's Easter. We got a lot to do here before we go to church on a Sunday morning. So we're talking about Australia, 27 years without a recession. Can you believe that? I had dinner with one of the chief economists, one of the research firms that we leverage or lean on when it comes to figuring out where we are in the economic cycle, watching wage growth, watching consumer spending, watching housing data, watching interest rates, watching inflation, manufacturing, regional, the United States as a whole, internationally, which, by the way, U.S. and China have picked up recently, and then everything that from earnings to employment. There's a lot of data to watch. It's a symphony of data, as we talk about. We get dribs and drabs of data in any given day, but they're just a piece of the orchestra that comes together as economic data to figure out whether we're going into a recession or coming out of a recession or where we are in the cycle. Right now, there's really just, we've had this period of time where it looked like we were rolling over, call it soft patch. And then the last couple of weeks, things have gone back up, the totality of the data has gone back north. Gone back to better than expected. And then you see expansion. And then you see the lowest unemployment or jobless claims number that we've seen since the 1960s, for goodness sakes. The 1960s. And by the way, that's not adjusted for population inflation. We had a lower number of jobless claims, which is good. Lower is better for jobless. Lower number of jobless claims this past week than we have seen on an absolute basis in 1960, when the population was obviously a lot less than it is today. That's the strength of this economy right now. And we think, though, that, wait a minute, because we've gone 10 years, don't we just have to roll over? Don't we have to go into recession? But just because an expansion is old doesn't mean it has to die. Australia is an example of that. So now, how long have they run? 27 years is a long time. Why? Why has Australia been able to get out of the way? And of course, what are we going to learn from that or get out of the way of recession? That we know they have natural resources, iron ore, coal, gas reserves. But guess what? We do too. We have a massive, if I was doing this radio show 20 years ago or 30 years ago, I wouldn't have said we're on par with the natural resources, let's say it relative to their size versus our size. But I'd say that today. We get more oil out of West Texas. We get more oil out of just the Permian Basin than a lot of the largest countries in the Middle East that the United States used to be, past tense, dependent on for foreign oil. We're no longer dependent on them at all. Thanks to a couple hundred square miles in Texas, that's how much has changed when it comes to natural resources. But that's the first item and the first reason Australia's been able to stay out of recession. Yeah, not that different than the United States. But there's a lot of other reasons we'll go into. And then we're going to go to the phones, your phone calls and questions here on a Sunday morning. It's Easter. Stay tuned. Good morning. Wake up, wake. Wake up, wake. Wake up and get yourself to church, yeah. Back to Money Matters here, Sunday morning, Easter Sunday. Phone line's open, so if you're headed to church, or, I don't know, maybe you're already finished with church this morning, so, and you're headed to Easter brunch, or today's going to be huge. Golf courses around the state will be completely packed. I called to see if I could get a tee time with the kids later on Sunday afternoon. Nope. Totally booked. In a lot of places, just because it's so beautiful today. It's like a perfect day today. Call it in, I don't know what it's going to be. I'm not Kirk Mellish, but I bet you it's going to be in the 70s some at least. And beautiful, bright blue sky. It's a perfect day for church. Yeah, looks like 70, 71 today. So beautiful. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. The number here in the studio, if you have questions, whether you're headed to from church, but you've been waiting to ask something and haven't been able to call into Money Matters, well, we're live right now. The number here is 404-872-0750. Again, Ryan Ely is here to take your phone calls, questions. You might even get Jake Moss on the phone if you call in. I don't know. There's like 10 people in the phone booth. You might get Jake. He's 7. I don't know if he's ready to screen financial calls just yet. But the number here is 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. Questions about, what would you be calling about? Well, maybe it's a Roth question or a money sitting around in cash doing nothing question. What do you do? What are you supposed to do with it? What's your next move? Maybe it has to do with mutual funds or ETFs or an annuity question. Or you are faced with the classic, I have a monthly pension amount, but they're also offering me a lump sum. Which one should I take? Does it pass the 6% test? Maybe you have a question that has to do with your withdrawal rate and what does that withdrawal rate need to be and how do you do it? Is it monthly? Is it quarterly? Or maybe it's a required minimum distribution question. What's the required amount you have when you reach 70 and a half? All of these questions are things that we tackle live here. Your calls and questions, I think, are such a great part of Money Matters. They help the rest of the audience as we talk through these. And I get a lot of ideas for what we write. I write for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And I get ideas from the questions that you're asking. And it's helpful to understand what people are worried about and what people are questioning. And so your questions are helpful. Anyway, give us a call in the studio. Phone line's open. The number is 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. That's 800-972-8255. Back to this just fascinating economic analog that is a really interesting study in. And again, I don't know if I've ever, I guess I maybe have heard about this, but I pass it off as, Australia is not even big enough to consider. It's nothing to do with, it's not like the United States, so forget about it. But of course, they're natural resource rich. Gas reserves, coal, iron ore. Australia, of course, it's close to China, and China started to expand. Australia has been, ever since China has been expanding in earnest, Australia's been right there to ride that tailwind. But even in 08, when economies all around the world, including China, took an absolute nosedive, Australia was able to kind of ride out that storm. China poured a bunch of stimulus into building new cities and roads and infrastructure That helped Australia ride through the Great Recession and the Great Financial Crisis that was global without really much of a downturn. There, I think they had one negative quarter of GDP growth, but they didn't have two in a row, so they didn't ever really hit a recession. The other part of this has to do with their what's called the superannuation system. And the reason I bring this up is that we have a reform in Congress and this, but for, it's in the House and the Senate, two different bills that are talking about 401k reform or retirement plan reform here in the United States right now. So let's take a look at what Australia is doing. They have something called the superannuation system. In 2009, and this is getting through the crisis, they had low debt, and they've done this pension reform back in the 1990s called superannuation. And the system, this superannuation system, companies are required to contribute to employees. They're required to contribute. Kind of like if you're a teacher here in Georgia, you have to contribute to TRS. You put in at least 5%. They put in 5%. So you're going to get this automatic pension savings type plan. Well, the whole country of Australia does this. To the tune of a little 9.25%. And by the way, that number's climbing all the way to the year 2025. The number will go to 12%. So that if you're somebody making $100,000 in the system in Australia, that means they're going to be putting almost 10 grand into this superannuation system per year for retirement. That's everybody of working age 18 to age 70. So employees choose where they invest the money. So it's even though you're forced to contribute it, you can still choose where to have it managed. And here's the other thing that's very different than our system. There are no loans. So you can't save a bunch of money in the superannuation system and say, oh, I need a big loan out of it, like you can here in the United States. So it's very often the nuances of these rules and the structure, the detail of these rules that can create a system that ends up having a huge impact or not. So the Aussies are forced to let the money cook. They're forced to let the money grow. They can't take it out. They also contribute to a system called they also have a Social Security type system as well. If you look at, this is outside the superannuation system, they also, as a population, have a savings rate of another 10%. So if you think about this, the super's assets, by the way, are $2.8 trillion. So there's a lot that we can learn from this. And I'm not saying that just because Australia has stayed out of recession for 27 years, so will the U.S. What I'm saying is that we have many of the same economic characteristics. Natural resource rich? Yes. We've got resources here in the United States with more oil coming out of Texas than most Middle Eastern countries, just like Australia. We sell to the world, not just China. Stable central bank, just like Australia. We have a variable currency. And that helps absorb financial shocks and a central bank that does everything in their power to keep the economy plowing forward. What about innovation and diversity? Unlike Australia, the United States is the most diverse economy in the world, as well as the most innovative economy in the world. So the vision of the United States, or the entrepreneurs here in the United States, and the work ethic of Americans, that's unrivaled by anybody, let alone Australia. Bottom line, I think that there's a lot we can learn from. And talking about Australia, one, I love their pension and retirement system. And the U.S., again, has just started to ratchet up their retirement planning reform to potentially help almost all employers get 401k plans up and running. But even though there are a lot of similarities to the Australian economy that stayed out of recession for 27 years, our economy is a whole lot better than Australia. Now, we both know the United States can't and won't, they're not going to stretch this thing out as long as the Aussies have. But it does give us some context for looking at this current expansion that we're in that's almost a full 10 years old and saying that this, without saying, oh, it's got to be over just because it's old age, just because the clock's been running for 10 years. We could have years of economic expansion ahead here in the United States before we have the next downturn. We'll go to the phones here, 404-872-0750. Gary joins us from Lawrenceville.
Hello, Wes.
Gary, what's going on? Good morning. Happy Easter, my friend.
Well, I was just listening to your program, and I'm 73 years old and retired now, but I've been on pretty much all around the world a couple times, and I'm surprised you focused on Australia. It's like I'm sitting out here by myself when people have economic discussions and, national politics, but I've never been to Australia, but in my travels, I have met different couples in my ages, in their 50s at the time. And that sounds like one fantastic place, but I want to know in particular what you thought. I traveled with one couple, my wife and I, and we were in Spain. He was a great help because he spoke good Spanish and French. But I don't want to lie to you on this, so check me out or don't quote me. But I believe at the time, their minimum wage was $17 an hour, and I've often wondered if that's something that contributed to their successful economy. Plus, get this now, he worked for the railroad, and he was younger than me, and he retired. And I don't know whether the railroad is government or private, but when he retired, in addition to his pension, he got a $50,000 like birthday gift, and that's what he and his wife were traveling around the world.
Birthday
and that's
gift?
How we met. In
well,
Spain.
Listen, if Australia is also handing out $50,000 birthday gifts, I'm moving, Gary. But here's the deal.
Well, just a few years back, I was in Scotland and Ireland, and we traveled with another couple for a few days, just having fun for pleasure, and they were from Australia, and they said they have national health care, and they love it. Mm. And a lot of us were Americans there, and we were all sharing experiences. Well,
here's the deal, because we've got to run to break here, Gary.
And they're paying for it. I just wonder what makes that place so great.
Well, here's the deal. They do have a minimum. Well, listen, we have a minimum wage here in the United States. The minimum wage in Australia is a little bit higher. It's like $18 or $18 or $19 for a 38-hour work week, I want to say. Okay. And they do have a pretty high minimum wage. And we do share some traits with Australia, right? $18. Ours isn't that far off from them. You get a lot of companies that are already raising their minimum wages. We've heard a lot of this in the news just this year to $15. So that's not too far off. Well, I don't think that the minimum wage is the silver bullet. I don't think the minimum wage is the silver bullet. What I really like about this, Gary, and thank you for your call, by the way, I like the fact that the mechanics of the retirement system, effectively, if you're going to get a job for $100,000 from an employer, the employer says, well, really, we're out of our pocket, we're giving you $110,000. Because you're only getting $100,000, we're putting another $10,000 in a retirement system. So it's the mechanics of that, which is really just a, I look at that as a structural shift. If employers kind of get used to that, imagine this is a country that doesn't have a retirement problem. The United States still has a massive retirement problem. It's because the focus, the structure of how we've done this hasn't put a real focus on making sure that we're saving money. I think that's the big difference here. I don't think it's a minimum wage. I don't think it's the healthcare system. I think it's the structure of the retirement system that we can learn from. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. It's Easter Sunday, and we've got to go right to Ryan Ely. Ryan Ely, weekend prize pack, man.
The weekend prize pack is a pair of tickets to see Jeff Lynne's ELO Live in concert Friday, July 5th at State Farm Arena. Tickets are on sale now at livenation.com. Caller number 7, the tickets are yours.
404-741-0750. It's 404-741-0750. We're in the middle of IPO season. Zoom Video Communications, IPO this past Thursday, $62 a share. That's 72% above what it came out as its IPO price, $36 IPO price. And I get a lot, I get questions about these IPOs. Hey, how do you get these IPOs? Well, remember, the real question is, how do you get the IPO before it goes public? That's the question. Once it goes public during that day, the reason you see these massive moves in a given day is that it's public. You can just go in and hit buy. You can put in a limit price of what you want to buy it at. You can put in a market order. And you've got to be really careful about that, obviously, because you can get a terrible price if you do it that way. But it's open to the public. You can go ahead and buy it. The day these come out, you can go buy it. What you really mean to ask is, how do you get these pre-IPO? So how do you get the $36 price, even though it was trading at $62 after a few minutes of trading? And the answer is, it really depends. It depends on the brokerage firm you're working with. A lot of the big brokerage firms, whether you're Fidelity or Schwab, or some of the big Wall Street firms, they participate in these IPOs. And part what they'll do is, they might have a couple million shares, and then every advisor there will get a couple hundred shares, maybe a few hundred shares, and they'll parse that out. But who really makes the big money, obviously, are the venture funds that put millions of dollars into these companies back before they looked like they're going to actually make anything or be successful. And the venture funds, those are the ones that really make the big, big money. I'm a big believer in that, the venture world, the private equity world, and that I believe is getting more and more open to the public, but it's going to take a lot of time. And we'll talk more about that in the next. That's one of the themes of 2019 for Money Matters. 10 o'clock hour, we're going to the phones. Enjoy this wonderful, beautiful Sunday, Easter. Stay tuned. Well, if you want to find me and the Money Matters team, easy to do so. Go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Emails come straight to me and the Money Matters team. Also, the podcast you can find at iTunes, Wes Moss Money Matters.